business.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin. I'm your Seahawks super fan. We've got a really, really good show. It's me. It's my buddy Andrew, the Jet super fan. What's going on, Andrew?
What's up, Justin? It's been a while, and I kind of feel like I'm being ostracized by the rest of the superfan community for not showing up over the past couple of months. But as I said to you off air, I kind of suck up most of the air out of the room. So
not
it's
true.
A good thing.
Not true. The number of times where we have said we need more Andrew on the show is numerous. I'm glad it sounds like you've got a little bit more free time so we can get you back some more. So I'm glad to have you. It's a perfect day to have you because I think the biggest NFL news involves your team and mine. We're going to go around, talk about these big cuts, some surprises, some surprising trades going on. But really, I don't want to bury the lead. The main event, your Jets, my Seahawks. Why don't you walk us through what happened?
Well, at least, I mean, this is going to be the last time the Jets are going to be on the marquee for the rest of the year. But... The Jets sent, about time, they sent Sheldon Richardson, who's been on the trade block for almost a year to two years right now, and they finally sent him to Seattle for I'm not sure if it's a conditional second round or if it's been concrete as a second round pick, and a swap of seventh round picks and wide receiver Jermaine Kearse. And if I'm the Jets, I'm a Jet fan, I'm thrilled with this move because I did not think the Jets were able to get this much value. Especially coming into the offseason, they've been trying to trade him for a while and they haven't been able to find any team to give up something that they'd want. And whether it be because Richardson hasn't been as productive over the past 2 years or just because he seems like an idiot, quite frankly. But Seattle's locker room, it would be kind of conducive to his mentality, I would think. So I think it's a great fit for them too. But the Jets were able to get a receiver that sadly is probably going to be their number one receiver in Jermaine Kearse. And they were able to finally free up that logjam they've had on the defensive line since they drafted Leonard Williams in the 2015 draft. So I'm all for this on the Jets side. And I'd love to hear your analysis of Seattle side, but I love their end of it too.
Yeah, I that's what I really wanted is I wanted to get your perspective from the Jets side. I also want to hear kind of how you feel from the Seahawks perspective, because I know, you know, you know the league really well, you know the teams really well, so I'm sure you've got some thoughts there, and I'll give you my thoughts on both sides as well, starting with the Seahawks. I really like the move. It was increasingly clear that Jermaine Kearse was going to be the odd man out amongst the wide receivers, and that there's a surprising move that we'll talk about a little bit later that kind of gives me a little bit of pause. But both in terms of his cost, sort of where his ceiling is, and just how many wide receivers look like we're going to be ahead of him, if he didn't find a trading partner, I think he was going to be out. And so I'm glad that somebody was able to trade for him. You know, he's a local guy. He went to high school here. He went to college here. So we liked having him around. He's made huge catches over the years. And in terms of what you're getting is a guy who is, at a minimum, like on a good roster, a three. Like he's a starting wide receiver. He's a professional wide receiver. You guys don't really have any of those right now. So that's a good thing for you. You know, I don't always buy into it that much, but he does come from kind of a winning culture, a winning pedigree, and a wide receiver room that's made up of professionals, of guys who approach the game, I think, the right way. And so I think not only will you get his on-the-field contributions, you'll get that in the locker room with the team that's rebuilding, a guy who, you know, I hate this phrase, but I'm saying it anyway, who kind of knows how to win, like knows that winning culture. And so I think he'll have benefits on and off the field. And even though he was more expensive than most of the wide receivers we had, he's pretty cheap, honestly. So he's not going to cost you hardly any money. On top of that, just like you said, Sheldon Richardson was going to be the odd man out there. This was the last year for him. And he, you know, he came into the league like gangbusters. His first 2 years, he was amazing. Hasn't been as good these last couple of years. And some of that has to do with some changes to the defensive fit. But his ability and his talent is tremendous. Like, you know, if you strip everything away, just look at his ability. He's one of the absolute best from an ability standpoint in the league. And he'll be able to do what he does best with this Seahawks team. I expect them to use him in their pass rush packages. I mean, it's the more every time I think about, you know, poor, let's say, old man Carson Palmer's out there on his rickety knees, and you know they're going four wide, and all of a sudden you have Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, Richardson, and Frank Clark all pass rushing. Like, who are you going to double team? And it's like any one of those guys could beat a double team from the get go. Anyway, so like that four man rush is insane. It's crazy. And from a Seahawks perspective, it gave up a two. Okay, I think my team's going to be pretty good, so I think it's going to be a later two. And if Richardson is great, maybe you get a Lombardi out of it. If he's bad, you move on after the year, and he's got enough talent, he'll sign for some money somewhere. So you'll probably, with some of the other players you're letting go on one-year deals, you'll probably get a high compensatory pick, maybe as high as a third. So then you're just dropping from a second to a third. Not a lot of risk. So, I mean, from a Seahawks perspective, I love the move.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said there. The thing that is also very important, and it's kind of answers why Richardson hasn't been as productive over the past couple of years, is because he hasn't been playing out of position. Like, the Jets had him an outside linebacker a bunch, which is not where you would want him. And it just shows the amount of athleticism that he has, that he was able to make it work. I mean, he wasn't great, but he was okay. And then we saw this preseason, the Jets were clearly trying to up his trade value. And he was basically unblockable this preseason. He was just reeking. If anyone watched the Giant game, like, Eric Flowers had no chance against him. And yeah, Eric Flowers didn't have much of a chance against most people. But
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, but he was just a wrecking ball. And back to the Jets aspect of it, when it comes to Kurse, yeah, you're right. The Jets don't really have professional wide receivers in their locker room. And you mentioned you're kind of like poo-pooing the culture part of it. And I'm usually one to agree with that. But over the past year, whether it was working with former NFL players and talking to them about stuff like this, like, it's more real than you could ever imagine, that type of stuff. And the fact that Robbie Anderson, who's second year undrafted, a free agent, our Darius Stewart, rookie out of Alabama, you have Sharon Peak, who I don't know if it's Sharon, Sharon. I don't even know. That's how no name this wide receiver core is. Second year guy out of Clemson. They really didn't have any veteran presence there, and it was clear they needed to get somebody. And you mentioned Kurse's contract. He's only making $2.5 million this year, and he's making $5 million next year. I mean, $5 million is kind of a lot, but $5 million, it's also non-guaranteed, so they could cut him if their heart desires. But of course, the biggest part of it is the second round pick, and you mentioned the compensatory pick. A lot of the Jet fans were saying, oh, why can't we just hold on to him, let him play out the year, and we'll get the third round compensatory pick. The Jets are going to have $80 million in cap space this offseason with a ton of holes. So they're going to be spending money. So the way it works, compensatory pick-wise, is that everything evens out. So even if the Jets lose Richardson to like a $17 million year contract, which is what he wants, if the Jets sign other free agents, they're not going to get that pick. So the fact that they were able to get a pick that was better than the best case scenario, in addition to a receiver, you can't have anything but praise for the way Mike Maccagnan handled this whole situation.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, from the Jets perspective, it's a great move. And I don't think anybody expected the Jets to get this much compensation, right? They got, not only did they get a second round pick for a player who was kind of out of place, they got a wide receiver who's pretty, you know, cost controlled. And on top of it, just like you said, that compensatory formula, it's an interesting thing because it seems to almost work the opposite of how it's intended, right? Teams that are very successful usually have a lot of highly paid guys. And a lot of these guys, they can't always keep because they're good players and they go sign big money contracts elsewhere. So they get compensatory picks to replace those guys. But teams that are rebuilding, like the Jets, who have a lot of cap money, have exactly the opposite problem, right? You know, you expect them to go spend money, which actually in the calculation reduces what you get from a compensatory standpoint. So like, and so like this works like exactly perfect for both of our teams because we will get compensatory picks because of our position in the league, and the Jets won't. That may be a little bit dense behind the scenes for some people, but stuff like that is really interesting. And like that kind of thought process is why, you know, certain GMs are very successful.
Yeah. And we mentioned that the Jets obviously are a winner in this trade. Seattle's a winner in this trade. Sheldon Richardson is a winner in this trade. I think that needs to be said too, because again, he's going to be playing a position that he needs to be playing, which is a three technique pass rusher who could also be moved outside on running downs. And then he's going to be in the spotlight on a winning team, a team that could handle his personality in the locker room. And he's going to get paid if he performs well. I mean, we mentioned that Seattle is known to make the big move and trade for these guys, whether it be Jimmy Graham or Percy Harvin. I mean, obviously the Graham move worked a little better than the Harvin move, but like this is a team that makes sense for Sheldon Richardson. And honestly, the biggest addition to the Jets, aside from the second round pick for this whole thing, is the fact that Sheldon's no longer on the team, because they needed to get rid of him. They, whether it was on the field, the fact that he was playing out of position, or off the field, the fact that he was still feuding with Brandon Marshall, who wasn't, he's not even on the team anymore, and just creating distractions that don't need to be there. And it was just a bad vibe all around. And it's a good thing that the Jets didn't go into the season with him. I don't need to watch any Sheldon Richardson interviews anymore after a 1-15 season. So I might be being generous there with 1-15, but I'm just happy that Maccagno was able to make the right move, and that Sheldon found a place that honestly is probably the most conducive for him in the entire league. I it's hard for me to come up with another place. Maybe Dallas, maybe Oakland, but Seattle is definitely up there with the destinations that make the most sense for him.
Agreed. All right, let's talk about some of the other moves that have been made too. And we talked about this a little bit off the air as well, that there's so much trading going on right now, which is so unlike what historically the league has done, which I love. I like the moves. I like the action. It takes what you thought was going to be the NFL this year and kind of spins it on its head. Let's talk a little bit about your division rival, the Patriots. This is a team that has been wheeling and dealing this week. So let's see if we can go down the list. They traded Jacoby Brissett to the Colts. They traded for Cassius Marsh from the Seahawks. They went and got, I'm going to butcher this name, Johnson Batamosi and Marquise Flower from the Lions, and the linebacker Marquise Flowers from the Bengals. Basically, they replaced a third of their defense, or at the very least, some of these guys will be special teamers. Man, that is a lot to digest. Andrew, help me out.
Well, you mentioned it. The special teams aspect of it is probably the biggest part and why they did this. And you mentioned they traded Brissett to Indianapolis. They got Philip Dorsett in return, and he's most likely going to be their punt returner, with Julian Edelman being out the year. So this is just a product of them trying to up their special teams. And a big part of that might be because they only had a couple of picks in this draft. So usually they fill out the special teams with late round picks, or most teams fill out special teams with late round picks, and they didn't have many. So maybe this is their way of kind of filling that void. They didn't hold on to Austin Carr, which I thought was a bit of a surprise. He had a very good preseason. He seems like your typical small white guy wide receiver that always gives the rest of the league fits. So, I mean, it seems like the Patriots can never use enough of those. He ended up signing with the Saints. But other than that, they're just loading up on special teams guys. And with Tom Brady's window, I mean, if you're going to trade late round draft picks, I mean, I don't think he's going to care very much.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair point. And so Cassius Marsh was a guy I was sort of surprised to see go. He'd been getting a lot of hype as a potential pass rusher for the Seahawks. But with Richardson coming in, I can see how they didn't particularly need Cassius Marsh there. And I think he'll do well in New England. What about the Browns? So they ended up trading a 6th-round pick to the Steelers for Sammy Coates. One if you ever hear Greg, the Steelers fan, talk about Stammy Coates, it sounded like he was going to be the next superstar. Two, a six-round pick doesn't sound like a whole lot to give up to get a wide receiver for a team that really needs them. And they also sent Justin Gilbert to the Steelers earlier, which, like, that's a lot of in-division trades. How do you evaluate that?
Well, they actually traded the pick they got for Gilbert back to the Steelers to get Coates. And they also received, in the Coates trade, they received a seventh-round pick also. So they literally just gave up a sixth-round pick for Coates and a seventh-round pick. And I don't know about Sammy Coates being a superstar and all, the guy needs to learn how to catch first. But he definitely has the long speed. And the thing that I would be concerned about if I were the Browns is, there's probably no better team in the league at developing wide receivers than the Steelers. And this is a team that just gave up on this guy after 1 year. And it's not like he didn't have opportunity either. Like he was a guy that had a lot of playing time last year because of Martavis Bryant being suspended. And he just didn't really take advantage of it much. And I guess it makes sense for the Browns to take a flyer on him. They're taking a bunch of flyers on receivers. And you kind of hinted at this earlier in the podcast, that they picked up your guy, the former Seattle receiver who was a bit of a surprise that they released Kaysen Williams. They're just taking flyers on a bunch of guys with talent, and that's what you got to do at this point. And as for the interdivision part of it, I don't think it makes that big a difference if you're dealing like lower guys on the roster. I it'd be one thing if a guy like, I mean, I was about to say, like Joe Hayden, right? I mean, Joe Hayden signed with the Steelers after he was cut. So, I mean, they didn't trade him, but that's a bigger interdivision trade than this is. But yeah, I don't think the Steelers are worried about the Browns very much. And I don't even think the Browns are worried about the Steelers very much right now. The Browns are really just playing themselves at this point. They're just trying to improve one game at a time. And the Steelers are just like, okay, you're the Browns. Well, what do we care if we give you one of our bust wide receivers that we couldn't develop?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I don't think any team develops any position better than the Steelers have been doing at the wide receiver position over the last 10 years or so. I mean, they've been cranking out star after star after star. So I suppose I would be a little concerned too. I want to go back to one we mentioned earlier, though. Jacoby Brissett to the Colts. I see that move, and that tells me that Andrew Luck is not healthy, and he's not going to be healthy for a little while. I don't think they're bringing him in necessarily to compete to start over Scott Tolzien. Maybe they are. But at a minimum, you know, if you have three quarterbacks, I think it means that you expect your backup to need a backup. So I'm awfully concerned about that situation. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a bummer because Luck obviously is one of my favorite guys to watch in the entire league, but he's going to be out for a couple of weeks at least. And Tolzien has just been atrocious. And it was actually very interesting because after the third preseason game, there were reports that the Patriots were likely to cut Brissett. And then Brissett came out and had maybe, like, statistically, might have had the best preseason performance a quarterback has ever had. He had, like, five total touchdowns. He threw, like, over 400 yards. He made a couple of really, really nice throws. And then the Patriots trade him. And it's I don't know if that's a signal that the Patriots are planning to keep Garoppolo no matter what next year. Because – or they're going to draft another guy. But Brissett, we saw last year the Patriots won a Sunday night game against the Texans with Brissett barely even throwing a pass. Like, he was running most of the time. So we know he could run. And then he threw a couple of really nice balls against the Giants, especially one to the corner of the end zone. I thought was one of the best throws I saw preseason when he was on the run and just threw it to the right corner. And I forgot who caught the ball, but it was a hell of a throw. And then that's the Colts' perspective of it. Dorsett obviously has been a complete bust, and he's one of the more disappointing players to come out in a long time. Like, I was a surprise when the Colts took him in the first place, because the one thing they didn't need at that point was a receiver. They needed either to protect Luck or get some defense. So that was doomed from the beginning, to be honest. But as for Brissett possibly starting, I mean, we all know it takes a while for a quarterback to learn a system and just to get used to his receivers. It'd be surprising to me if he starts in week one, but we're like Scott Tolzien, like it's only a matter of time until everyone gets sick of watching him play quarterback. So maybe Brissett gets a start or two before Luck comes back.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what I want to do now, Andrew, is I want to run down the list, and I want to be kind of rapid fire. So let's try and get through these fairly quick. And I want to go team by team. We'll talk potentially either people that they've cut, people that they've signed. Just a quick check-in with teams now that we've done this final 53 cut, all right?
Oh, you got it.
All right, so we're going to start in the AFC East. We're going to go through the whole division. So the Bills have already gotten rid of Sammy Watkins. They've already gotten rid of Ronald Darby. They just got rid of Rod Streeter. Do they have any wide receivers at this point?
I mentioned this on the AFC East preview, I believe back in June. I think Zay Jones is going to be a hell of a player. I don't know if he was ready to be the number one option, because back when we recorded that podcast, Sammy Watkins was still on the team. But Jordan Matthews might not be healthy week one. So we're going to have to wait for that. But I'm a big fan of Zay Jones. But the problem is, I don't think Tyrod Taylor is a fit at all for this offensive system. And I don't think I wouldn't be surprised if Nathan Peterman ends up being the quarterback by like week six. And it's kind of sad to me, because I think Taylor is very underappreciated. And if he was on a team like Jacksonville, I think that makes Jacksonville actually the favorite in that division. But he's not. And Blake Bortles is the quarterback. So.
It sounds like the Dolphins are working on an extension for TJ McDonald for big money. Numbers I'm seeing are $24 million over 4 years. Good deal, bad deal? Is he worth that much money?
So before he was suspended, he was a very good safety. And it's interesting, because the Dolphins just bought him in this offseason. So he hasn't even played a game, and he's already gotten an extension. It sounds like a very Mike Tannenbaum move to me, but it's not huge money. If he performs up to his previous standard before his suspension, then it's probably a good deal. You know, I mean, Rashad Jones, the other safety, it's one of the highest paid safeties in the league. So, I mean, is Rashad Jones that much better than a healthy TJ McDonald? I don't think he's that much better, and he's getting paid almost twice the amount of money. So I think it's a pretty decent move for Dolphins if he comes back the way he was before.
The Patriots lost Julian Edelman. They went and they got Philip Dorsett. That sounds like a pretty big downgrade to me. Or is this going to be the Patriots thing where somebody else's cast off becomes a superstar? How do you think Philip Dorsett's going to do in New England?
I don't think Dorsett's anything special. I think the biggest aspect of this trade was either on special teams, or it allows Chris Hogan to kind of move to the slot if they want to play Dorsett on the outside. I don't think Dorsett is gonna do anything much. I think the Patriots are going to, as they do always, they're just a very malleable team when it comes to scheme. They'll find a way to put Rex Burkhead in the slot or play multiple running backs. They have four legit running backs, and there's no way they're only going to play one at a time. So I wouldn't be surprised to see multiple running backs play the wide receiver in the backfield. That's what they do. They try to find the mismatch, and that's what they're going to keep doing.
Are you surprised that Matt Forte is still on your Jets?
No, I'm not surprised, because the Jets weren't going to get anything if they cut him. You know, one of my biggest pet peeves all of last year was the fact that they kept playing Forte over Bilal Powell, and Bilal Powell was clearly the better player. And I've said this a billion times. 2 years ago, when the Jets went 10-6 with Fitzpatrick, and they lost that Buffalo Bills game in week 17, Powell didn't play. And those 5 weeks beforehand, the Jets were on a 5-game winning streak, and Powell was leading the league among running backs in receiving yards and receptions. And all of a sudden, he makes the same amount of money as Forte, but for some reason, Forte has more prestige, I guess. So they put him as the number one guy, and it was clear that Powell is the better player. And then Elijah McGuire, who they took this year, I believe out of Louisiana Lafayette, I think in the sixth round, he's looked pretty good in the preseason. So the Jets were trying to trade Forte, but other than Philadelphia, there aren't many teams, and maybe Washington, that really need a running back, especially one that's making $4 million guaranteed. So what I could see happening is Forte maybe playing a little bit in the first couple of weeks. Maybe he shows something and the Jets trade him for a late round pick. But I'm not surprised that he's still on the team at all.
All right, let's turn to the AFC North. The Ravens were kind of interesting to watch this offseason, because, you know, they lost Jeremy Zuta a couple years ago. He went and signed for, you know, decent money elsewhere. Was cut, so they immediately re-signed him. Then they cut him again. Is he done? Is he toast? Is he that bad? Because, I mean, it looks like the Ravens could use some offensive line help this year.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. I mean, he made the Pro Bowl for Baltimore last year, and then they cut him, and he signed somewhere else, and then he caught him, got caught again, and it's on him. I really don't know what to make of it. But I could tell you that this team is very happy to have Flacco back at quarterback, because he returned to practice on Saturday. And of course, this whole Kaepernick thing's been beaten to death, but Ryan Mallett sure as hell wasn't going to get it done. So, I mean, they got Flacco back, they got Danny Woodhead back, and they got Rashad Perriman back all at the same time. So, I mean, I'm not as big on the Ravens as most people are this year. I think their defense is going to be really, really good, but their offense still worries me, especially because, again, we mentioned the offensive line issues. So, I mean, we'll see. But they were one of the more brutal teams to watch last year, and I don't think it's going to change much.
Yeah, I also don't feel like you can just say that they're set at quarterback. I mean, Joe Flacco has been as much a part of the problem the last 2 years as anything else. So, yeah, I'm with you. I like their defense. The offense, though, I've got a lot of concerns about. The Bengals drafted a kicker. They cut him. Last year, who was a Tampa Bay, drafted Robert Aguayo in the second round. He's off the team. Why the hell would you spend a draft pick on a kicker?
Well, you're talking to a fan of a team that took Mike Nugent in the second round because they thought he was the missing piece after Doug Bryan missed those field goals in the divisional round against the Steelers, and I believe it was 2005. So you're talking to someone who is definitely the original. I mean, no one's going to beat the Jets in incompetence. So, like, they took Elliott in the fifth round this year, the kicker that they ended up cutting, Jake Elliott. They took him in the fifth round, and they ended up going with Randy Bullock. But, yeah, it's kind of perplexing, especially after the whole Aguayo situation. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, the Bengals, to me, like, it's all going to come down to if they could protect Andy Dalton or not. Because like they lost a lot of offensive linemen, they lost Zeitler, they lost Whitworth. If they could protect Dalton, then the offense shouldn't take a step back, especially with the addition of Joe Mixon. But if not, we'll probably be seeing Randy Bullock a lot attempting these field goals, and that's not going to help anybody.
All right. So in terms of the Browns, listen to this. So they went from, in my opinion, at the end of last year, once the offseason started, they had basically nobody at wide receiver. Now they've got Kenny Britt, Sammy Coates, and they just picked up Kaysen Williams, who was a really surprise cut from the Seahawks, who played lights out this preseason. They're starting to look like they might actually have some semblance of a team, especially if DeShone Kizer turns out to be a good football player. Are they on the rise? Are they on the up and up?
Again, they're one of those teams that are just taking flyers and a bunch of guys and hoping something sticks, you know. It's hard to not be on the rise after winning one game. So, yeah, they
as you're about to find out soon.
Yes, exactly. Hopefully. A big part of me already knows the Jets are going to find a way to win five games and screw themselves out of a top pick, because that's what they always do. But for the Browns, I'm a fan of just the way they're building the roster right now. They just, in pure talent, they got one of the better offensive lines in the league, and that's always a great place to start. And yeah, you mentioned the receivers. I was kind of perplexed that they let Terrell Pryor go, but I mean, they brought in Kenny Britt. I mean, I'd still rather have Pryor just based on talent. And they got a bunch of random receivers that hopefully they one of them pans out. But I'd be shocked if the receiver wasn't one of the top things that they take next year with all their picks. I know they might still need a quarterback. I'm pretty big on DeShone Kizer. I think either him or Mahomes are the two most physically gifted quarterbacks in this draft. And we'll see if Kizer pans out. But you can't be anything but happy with the direction this team is heading in right now, because they're definitely not heading in the wrong direction, because it'd be pretty difficult to get worse.
All right. I'm reading some reports that it looks like Le'Veon Bell is ready to report to camp. In my experience, these players who hold out for all of camp, miss all the preseason games, it's like a 99% chance they're going to get injured early. Do you have any concerns about Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, I definitely see that logic. I wouldn't be surprised if he pulls a hammy or something, but like by all indications, he's been working out like a monster by himself. I mean, what are the sources on that? You know, like what is he going to say? The people he's working out with are going to say, no, he just sits and smokes weed all day. No, but like, he's going number one or number two in most fantasy drafts. So there are a lot of people counting on him to stay healthy. So I just say, if you got Le'Veon Bell, you just better be loading up on James Conner at the end of the draft, because to me, he's my favorite running back to watch in the league. He's most people's favorite running back to watch in the league, just because his style is so like singular. There aren't many people that do what he does and how he does it. But you make a great point that he very well could pull a hammy, and it wouldn't be the first time someone who's whole held out did that. There's also one thing that we didn't touch on when it comes to the Steelers, that they actually traded Ross Cockrell, who is projected to be a starting cornerback for them, to the New York Giants. This is might have been in response to their signing of Joe Hayden, but I was kind of surprised that they gave up on him very quick. But maybe we'll talk about that more when we get to the Giants.
What do you think about Joe Hayden? I mean, everything just talking to Ben, our Browns super fan, he says that he is done, that he can't move anymore. You look at his Pro Football Focus grades, which you may have heard of, and his grades are terrible over these last two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's got to be due to injury. He's been very banged up, whether he's playing through it or just in general, just being out. And cornerbacks lose it faster than most positions. I mean, we saw that with my guy, Darrelle Revis, last year. You know, like 2 years ago, he gave up the lowest quarterback rating of any cornerback in the league in his first year back with the Jets, and then now he's unemployed. So that just goes to show you, one little burst of speed, you lose that, and these receivers will leave you in the dust. So maybe the Browns superfan is right. You know, so, I mean, he knows the team better than most, and he watched more Browns games than I did last year, which is actually saying something, because my job last year for Bleacher Report was to watch the games that the talent or the guys that analysts wouldn't want to watch, because there were only a certain amount of TVs in the studio. So I was stuck outside the studio watching the Browns and the Jaguars and the Jets. So, I mean, I watched a lot of Browns football last year, and the little I did watch, I mean, Joe Hayden didn't look good to me. So maybe if it's a human element type of thing, like if he's playing for a team that's actually winning, maybe he gives a little more effort and he just finds the fun in the game again. That wouldn't surprise me either, considering he has a history of being one of the better corners in the league, and he's still only 28. So it could go either way. I'd probably lean a little bit him towards being better than what he was last year, but that's just my opinion.
All right, so you learned it here first, everybody. Cornerbacks are the running backs of the defense. They fall off that cliff. Yeah. All right. So up next, just real quick on the Texans. They signed DeAndre Hopkins to a big extension. Is he the only good player on that offense?
Well, the other best player on their offense is their left tackle, Dwayne Brown, and he's holding out.
Yeah, where's he at? Yeah, Oh, man.
He's holding out, and it's funny because they just gave extensions to Hopkins, to CJ Fedorowicz, their tight end, and to Jay Proch, a fullback, and their left tackle is not getting paid. So I don't know. I mean, this is all the money they saved by getting rid of Osweiler. So it was a good move on Houston's part. It was obviously worth it for them, but like, I would rather sign my left tackle than my fullback and my average tight end. So I don't know. That's kind of perplexing.
Speaking of terrible quarterback situations, the Jaguars. Reports are they're going to keep three QBs. None of them are any good. Blake Bortles has been such a disappointment these last 2 years. Is this a hopeless team? Is this like a bottom quarter of the league team this year, you think?
It's sad because if you don't just take away the quarterbacks, then they have one of the better rosters in the league. And this is a bit of a breaking news. Like, their best quarterback this preseason was Brandon Allen, who was a 6th round pick last year, and they just waived him.
Oh,
so yeah.
Whoa.
So right now, all they have is Bortles and Chad Henne. So maybe they're trying to get him onto the practice squad, but it's kind of weird. I'm very surprised at that move. And maybe it signals a Kaepernick move. I doubt it.
Yeah, Brandon Allen was actually legitimately somewhat impressive this preseason. I remember watching him, you know, he would always come in late in the games, and at least one occasion where he led some really, really good, like, two-minute drill type drives to end a game. I want to say that he had at least one game-winning drive this preseason. And his arm looked good, so that's a surprise to me.
Yeah, maybe he burst into to Tom Coughlin's office and basically said that, like, I should be the guy. And then Tom Coughlin says, you know, I hear you, but you showed up 5 minutes late, so you're cut.
Classic Tom Coughlin.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He must be fun at parties. Okay, so if you're the Titans, you got a young quarterback that you love. You got a running game that is dynamic. Your wide receivers, little sketchy, little iffy. So, you know, they've got Eric Decker, drafted Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor. Do you like what they're doing?
I love it.
They cut Eric Weems, and anybody who cuts Eric Weems, in my opinion, has done something right. But you're a fan though of the way that they're building this wide receiver position?
Yes, big time. I mean, I've watched Eric Decker over the past couple of years. He's one of the more underrated players in the entire league, one of the better route runners in the entire league, one of the best red zone receivers in the entire league. It's not a coincidence that once he left in week two last year, that the whole entire Jets offense went down the tube. But Corey Davis, the fifth pick in the draft, I thought that was a little high, but like, what, they probably weren't going to get him with their next pick. So, like, it's one of those things where if you, that's your guy, take him. And they have one of the best offensive lines in the entire league. And then haven't even mentioned Delanie Walker. So their offense is all set. And it's just a matter of if their defense can improve from last year. And they made the moves necessary with Adoree Jackson and Logan Ryan. So we'll see. There's one team that we passed over, and I'm pretty sure you did it on purpose. We spoke a lot of it about them already, but there's one move that the Indianapolis Colts made that I found very interesting. And that was, they picked up the former Washington Redskin running back, Matt Jones. And that was one of the more sneaky signings, I would say, of this whole period. And it would not surprise me if he's the number one running back towards, like, the end of the season. I mean, Scott McLuhan, the former Washington Redskin general manager, when asked who's the most underrated player in the league, he would always say Matt Jones, and that Matt Jones, if he was given more of an opportunity, would make the most of it. I mean, he's averages 4.6 yards per carry for his career. So that's a big number. Not for his career. That was 4.6 last season. And then he got, as RotoWorld puts it, sent to Siberia by Coach Jay Gruden. I think it's a big move by the Colts, because their backup beforehand was Robert Turbin, who was like the definition. I mean, you know this, like the definition of a street, off the street running back. So I think that's a big move that hasn't been talked about much.
Especially from a fantasy perspective, that could be something to keep an eye on. But yeah, I did. I skipped them on purpose. all right. So, Broncos, they've been reunited with Brock Osweiler. They have jettisoned TJ Ward. I don't know if either of those things matter that much, honestly. What do you think?
I mean, TJ Ward, maybe he was a product of his surroundings on that defense, but he's a very good player, a very productive player. He's a bit of a liability in coverage, but he's one of the more fearsome strong safeties in the league, down in the box, or if someone's going to get lit up on a pass over the middle. He ended up getting picked up by Tampa Bay, which I think is a great move by them, because safety is one of their more pressing needs. And so that's the move that they made. And in terms of Osweiler, I mean, I guess it makes sense, because Paxton Lynch is out, and you want someone who knows the offense and someone who's just familiar with the receivers and the surroundings. So I guess it makes sense. But I'm just going to spare me all the John Elway's a genius takes, because he was willing to give him $30 million guaranteed. You know, so it's not like he just got him back and was like, yeah, you know, this is what I was planning the entire time. So he's a good backup quarterback, I guess. He's competent backup. We all know he shouldn't be starting. So it is what it is.
All right, the Chiefs have cut C.J. Spiller, who, man, that guy's had such an up-and-down career. But with Spencer Ware out, I'm a little worried that they're really thin at running back right now. Like, I like Kareem Hunt. I think Charcandrick West is a small step above just a guy. But, you know, for a team that I think is fairly complete, that makes me nervous.
Yeah, and Kareem Hunt is the sleeper running back. Anyway, I wouldn't even call him a sleeper. And he was more of a sleeper before Ware got hurt. But now, like, he's going, like, in the second or third round in a lot of fantasy drafts. So there's a lot of pressure on this guy. And to me, it's one of those things. I mean, it's not to get, like, we're talking about fantasy here. But I never like to pay for a player's ceiling. You know, like, I never want to pay for a guy that it will pay off if he hits his best case scenario. I always like to go for the high floor guys who I know that they're not going to kill me, and week to week they're going to get me some points, as opposed to paying for a guy that the only way it works out if he has his best case scenario. There's a possibility they bring Spiller back and after week one, just so the contract isn't guaranteed. So there's that. But yeah, I'd be kind of concerned. But Andy Reid always finds a way to make his offense work. And as I said on Slack a couple nights ago, when our Chiefs super fan Nick was calling me out for saying that the Jets might be we're going to be better than the Chiefs last year, I just told him to be happy that we're no longer have to watch out. Most likely not going to have to watch Alex Smith for much longer, as Mahomes is going to come in and light up the league.
Mike Williams, the wide receiver Mike Williams, which could refer to probably 50 different people last 10 years of the league, all of which, by the way, seem to have had trouble and probably not panned out. I just wouldn't draft a Mike Williams wide receiver. It was activated off of the PUP, so the Chargers finally get their top pick to play with. I think they're still missing like their second and maybe third pick though. So a rookie wide receiver who has missed basically all of the preseason, do you have any expectations for him to contribute this year?
Towards the end of the year, yeah, but it was kind of a surprise to me when they took him in the first place. I mean, it wasn't a surprise to Ken, because Chargers superfan took him in our mock draft. Mm-hmm. But it's not like they need receivers. You know, I mean, obviously they'll need them if this apocalypse of injuries keeps coming for them. But Keenan Allen, Tyrell Williams, Travis Benjamin, I'm sure I'm missing somebody. But of course, you have the tight ends and Henry and Gates. Like, he has a bunch of weapons, Phillip Rivers does. So they're going to be able to bring Mike Williams along slowly. So I'm a fan of his. He's kind of like a little Alshon Jeffrey, a type of receiver, like the jump ball specialist. So I like his talent, but their situation allows them to maybe bring him along more slowly than a number 7 overall pick would usually be brought along.
Moving on to the Raiders. So I think a lot of people, myself included, are really, really high on the Raiders. That being said, I'm starting to get a little worried about the defense behind basically Khalil Mack. You know, they're young. They're fairly unproven. They have at least one undrafted rookie at linebacker. So I don't know. Are we starting to see kind of a chink in that Oakland armor?
Yeah, I think they might very well have the worst linebacker group in the entire league. And I mean, we know that, like, if you're going to be weak at one level of the defense, the second level is usually the one you're going to be weak at. But we mentioned the Patriots earlier, that they always find the mismatch. Like, they're just going to need to find someone, whoever the linebacker is on, just pick on him. And yeah, their corners also, I mean, Sean Smith, I would not be surprised if he falls off a cliff this year. He doesn't look the same to me in preseason. If these tall corners lose one little bit of speed, then they need to be moving to safety. And right now, yeah, they took Conley in the first round and David Amerson, who has had an up and down career, but their defense definitely has a lot of holes. And Derek Carr is going to that's what it is. That's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to keep throwing the ball over the yard and keep up with his below-average defense.
We are on to the NFC, and we're going to be even more rapid in our rapid because we're starting to run a little bit long. So extra rapid fire. So we can start with the NFC East. The the Cowboys. Obviously, we don't totally know what's going to happen with Ezekiel Elliott. It sounds like our choices at this point are basically he's suspended for 6 games, or there's some sort of restraining order where he can't get suspended at all. So if you are a man putting down your money on your fantasy league for your draft tomorrow, are you going to draft Ezekiel Elliott? And if so, how high?
I'm in a league where we have to start 3 running backs, and I have the 7th pick. I'm taking Ezekiel Elliott at 7 if he's there. So, I've been saying it since the beginning. I don't even know what he's being suspended for. Like, I know obviously it's more of a pattern of behavior type of thing, but there's just I feel like there's a very little information out on this thing, and we saw what happened with the Fleetgate and just the way this whole process works. That like it none of this comes to fruition until much later.
Yeah, and you know, we had an extensive show about it recently, so I don't want to get too much into it. But yeah, it certainly feels like he's being suspended for pattern of behavior when there have, in recent memory, been worse patterns of worse behavior. So we can make a whole show out of that. Your hero, your savior, your best friend, Geno Smith, has secured himself a roster spot backing up Eli Manning, which, given Eli Manning's age, I know he's been historically durable. You don't know. How do I put this nicely?
Oh God.
Are you as surprised as I am that Geno Smith has any job whatsoever in the NFL at this point?
No, I've always been a little bit of a, I don't want to say fan, but I've been a little defender of his over the years. He definitely has the talent, but of course we had the whole punching in the jaw thing and the fact that he can't read a defense. So there, that's that. But he's definitely a more talented quarterback than Eli Manning is at this point of his career. I don't think that's even debatable, to be honest. I'm watching Eli this preseason, and to me, I think the Giants are going to come third in this division. A lot of people have them as the favorite. I don't think so. I think the offensive line is really going to be the downfall of this team, especially when you have a statue in the pocket like Eli. And we saw last year, he almost looks scared to throw at times. And yeah, he has a great receivers to throw the ball to, and he has Marshall now he can throw the ball up to, and he's got, to me, the best receiver in the league in Odell Beckham. So, it's not going to shock me if they win the division, but I made a bold prediction on another podcast that I think the Eagles are actually going to win this division.
Speaking of the Eagles, turns out they're the opposite of the Chiefs, because they have basically filled their about 10% of their roster as running backs. Like, I just want to make that clear. LeGarrette Blount, Wendell Smallwood, Donnell Pumphrey, Corey Clement, and they still have Darren Sproles.
Yeah, Darren Sproles. Sorry to interrupt you, but Darren Sproles is the guy there, I think.
Okay, that's my question. Like who's the guy?
Yeah, I'm avoiding most of these guys in fantasy, but I'd take Sproles because I think there's a reason he hasn't been playing much in the preseason, and that's because they want to keep him healthy, and they know he's going to be the guy. Blount looks like a fat schlub and is only ever productive on the Patriots, and Smallwood doesn't seem like anything special to me. So to me, Sproles is the guy, and maybe they bring in somebody. Maybe they trade for Matt Forte later in the season.
We go to Washington. From what I have seen, Kirk Cousins has been bad this preseason. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Kirk Cousins believer. I think he's a really good quarterback. It was the loss of his top 2 wide receivers too much for him to overcome?
I am the complete opposite of a Kirk Cousins believer.
oh, great. You believe in Geno Smith, but not Kirk Cousins.
it's all about expectations, though, right? Like, no one thinks Geno Smith is anything. I still don't think he's anything either. I don't think he's a starting quarterback. I think he's a good backup. To me, Kirk Cousins is an average NFL quarterback. And if you put good weapons around him, he could make use of them. But is he worth all this money that he's going to be paid? Is he going to be worth the amount of money that they gave Stafford or guys that could actually sling the ball around the yard? I don't think so. And I've never been a huge fan of his. I think he's one of those guys that the receivers make him as opposed to he makes the receivers. And we're going to see what happens. He lost a bunch of weapons. And yeah, they replaced him with Terrell Pryor, and maybe you give a bigger role to Josh Dotson and Jameson Crowder. So they still have weapons, but I would not be surprised if he takes a big step back this year at all.
To the NFC North, the Bears have lost Cameron Meredith to injured reserve. That puts Kevin White, who let's just clear off a seat for him on injured reserve too, because he seems to always end up there as their number one receiver. Which, what is Kendall Wright their best wide receiver after Kendall Wright after Kevin White? That's a mouthful. I like a lot of players on the Bears. I love Jordan Howard, but are you going to be fighting with them for draft, for like bottom of the draft position?
They have, I think their defense is better than most people expect. I think they have a lot of talent. They have one of the better interior offensive lines in the league too, and Howard should be able to run. But yeah, I mean, I'm actually a pretty big fan of Trubisky also, and I'm not a fan of Glennon at all. I think Glennon's one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, and I couldn't believe the contract he got, and I'm just so glad.
And that's what parts of what factors into it. And again, I want to keep things moving, so I don't want to get too deep into it, but like Mike Glennon's been a dumpster fire this preseason. And I think if they're smart, they're going to keep Trubisky on the bench as long as they can. Which means I see them racking up L's because they're going to have Mike Glennon throwing to, at best, like number three level receivers. Again, I'm assuming Kevin White's going to go down with an injury. So even if they have a good defense, I just don't see where the points come from outside of hopefully not grinding Jordan Howard into the ground.
Yeah, and we're not going to see Victor Cruz also in the end zone. So that's always a good thing.
You salted dance hater. All right. The Lions have the most expensive player in league history. Good deal, bad deal?
I think it comes down to opportunity cost, right? So, like, where are you going to find a quarterback if you're Detroit? And I've always been a big Matt Stafford fan ever since that. I feel like it was his rookie year where he had that wired up where he, like, played with a separated shoulder and he was just like straight up just let his team back down the field, and he's just one of the more talented guys in the league. So I like Stafford a lot. I think they didn't really have much of a choice, to be honest, and the way quarterback salaries are going, I mean, he's going to be the fifth highest paid quarterback in football within the next year, so once all these other guys get their contracts.
In Green Bay, who is going to be carrying the football, and does it matter?
I don't know if he'll be carrying the football, but Ty Montgomery will definitely be in the backfield. It's just a matter of how many times he actually gets the ball handed off to him as opposed to thrown to him. I like Montgomery. I think his draft position right now in fantasy is a little too rich for my taste, but I think he's got the body type. And while he didn't play like great last year at certain points, The guy who they drafted, Jamal Williams, looked even worse this preseason. He literally managed 61 yards and 25 carries. So Montgomery's the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He was fairly impressive last year. I got to give him credit for that. The Vikings signed Alex Boone off of my hated rival 49ers, gave him a 4-year deal, and now he's cut. Does one, I'm not sure how much of the Vikings you watched last year. Is Alex Boone still a good player? And two, is there any hope of the Vikings running game if they don't have an excellent offensive line?
So I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on Alex Boone, but like we all know that last year the Vikings offensive line was one of the worst in the entire league. So yeah, it's not surprising to me that they ended up cutting him. They made a lot of moves this offseason to try to make it average. They brought in Riley Reiff to play left tackle. They brought in Mike Remmers to play right tackle. And they drafted a rookie center, Pat Elflein, who I was actually a pretty big fan of. So, yeah, I think their offensive line is going to be hard for the offensive line to be worse than it was last year. And I was extremely surprised with how well Sam Bradford played last year, especially that he was the most efficient deep quarterback in the entire league last year. He didn't throw deep much, but when he did, it was very successful. And maybe a full year, full offseason with that receiving core, I don't think people take into account much that he was basically brought in on this day last year, and he didn't have time to get used to the rest of his team. I still think Green Bay is going to win this division, but I think Vikings are clear number two, and that's no slight to Detroit. I just think Detroit got like very lucky last year, and I don't see Stafford leading them to 8 comeback wins again this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're a lot higher on the Vikings than I am. All right, turning to the NFC South. And like this has less to do with the like cutting down to the 53 man, et cetera, et cetera. The Falcons, in my opinion, have not looked amazing this preseason. Obviously last year they had a historically great offense, like not just good, but historically good. Are you expecting a lot of regression? Because across the spectrum, what I'm saying is people either say these guys are going to crash and burn, or we're looking at a rematch of the Super Bowl next year. Where on that spectrum do you lie?
I think their offense is going to take a little bit of a step back. It's going to be hard for them to do what they did last year. They were one of the best offenses of all time last year. And we all know the Kyle Shanahan stuff, but I think their defense is going to be a lot better this year. I think the Super Bowl was just a preview of what their defense can do. And now they're going to, I believe that their defense has the speed, it has the talent, and it's going to make up for that. I have no idea who's winning this division. I still haven't made my pick, to be honest.
Yeah, that's I feel the same way. That's a tough division for me to pick. And it's because I think all of their teams are the exact same thing, where like any one of them could be amazing this year. Any one of them could just be terrible this year. Speaking of amazing or terrible, the Panthers right now are carrying two kickers. We've cut down to the to 53 men. They've got Graham Gano and a rookie. And I don't know if they drafted the rookie or if they just picked him up off the street. That seems crazy to me to carry two kickers once you've made the cuts down to 53.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that, except that I love the rookie's name, and his name is Harrison Butker. So I hope he wins. I hope he wins.
All right, on to the Saints. So I'm most curious, really, about their wide receiver position. Obviously, they traded one of their guys to the Patriots. I mean, they're going to rack up yards through the air no matter what, just because of Drew Brees. But now with Willie Snead being suspended, who's going to be catching the football?
Well, it's going to be Michael Thomas for damn sure. I mean, that's what most fantasy owners hope, because he's going in the early second round in most drafts. And we mentioned earlier that they picked up Austin Carr, who's one of those receivers for the Patriots that played well this preseason. And then our old friend Ted Ginn, who's on a journey to play for every team in the National Football League. So I think Ted Ginn could definitely make a bunch of big plays in this offense, kind of play that deep wide receiver role, that Robert Meacham role that's been prevalent ever since Sean Payton got there. So I think it's gonna be more of a democratic thing going on. Just whoever the open guy is, Drew Brees is gonna find him.
Great. We get to watch Ted Ginn go streaking down the field and then bounce the ball off of his hands like he's playing volleyball. It's what he's best at.
Everybody's doing it.
yeah, he's like he just has to check a couple off and then he's got the whole set. It's just like collecting coins or something. All right, Buccaneers, this offense I think could be tremendous. I will be the first to admit I was absolutely wrong about Jameis Winston. I didn't like him coming out of school. I really thought that he was going to struggle in the NFL, and he hasn't. And then on top of that, Mike Evans, like all he does is produce. He's one of what, three players ever to have 1,000 yards receiving his first 4 years in the league. And I feel like he's kind of perennially underrated. And now they've added DeSean Jackson to that offense. So you have this big bodied Mike Evans, and then you have this guy who's an absolute burner in DeSean Jackson. You know, we talked about, we feel like any one of these teams could win the division. Man, this might be my pick. I love what they're doing there. What are your thoughts on these Buccaneers?
Well, yeah, I love those moves they made. The OJ Howard pick, I think, is a great pick too. The two tight end offense they could have with Brait. My concern would be their offensive line. Donovan Smith has not been good since he came out of Penn State. They're going to get a year J.R. Sweezy. I mean, you know him, but he was basically out all of last year with a back injury. And aside from Ali Marpet, they don't really have any above average offensive linemen. And we saw that if James doesn't get protection, he's going to throw the ball up there. And even when he does get protection, he's going to throw the ball up there. So there's a very high variance with this team. And yeah, they definitely could win the division. But if there was going to be one team that I could see most likely to keep coming fourth, it would be them. I think they had the lowest floor out of any of these four teams.
Yeah. My only question is, what's an offensive line? All right. On to the NFC West. My division. We're going to start with the Cardinals, who, by the way, in case you were wondering, it is confirmed, do have the oldest roster in the NFL, which is... Good for you guys. I'm happy to see that. And I think the Rams have one of the youngest, if not the youngest. So I guess you can be a crap team in both situations. So the Arizona Cardinals, I'm sorry, I just want to make fun of. They spent a fourth round pick on guard Dorian Johnson out of Pitt, who Greg would insist probably means he's going to the Hall of Fame. But he hasn't been able to make the roster due to like medical issues, which is why he fell in the first place. Without him, with a, let's say, an okay, not great offensive line and some great pass rushers in the division. We talked plenty about my team, my pass rushers, but you also look at what the Rams can do. I mean, you know, with Robert Quinn, Aaron Donald, I have some very, very major concerns that they're going to get through the season with a healthy David Johnson, who they gave way too many touches to, and Carson Palmer, who at this point has osteoporosis. Do you think they have the pieces they need to make to have like another 13 win season to go on another big run like they did 2 years ago? Or are they on the verge of collapse?
I think they're one of those teams with a high ceiling and low floor. Because Palmer gets hurt, they're screwed. And he's very likely to get hurt behind that offensive line and the fact that he's a very immobile quarterback. So they definitely have issues there. And if David Johnson gets hurt, they're screwed.
Yeah.
Because he's their whole offense. So it wouldn't surprise me either way. I'd probably lean a little bit more towards them being better just because I think Tyrann Mathieu being healthy is a huge upgrade. And I think their defense is going to be a lot better than it was last year. But yeah, I don't think they're going to win the division. I really don't see a way that the Seahawks don't win this division. That's the truth.
Flattery will get you nowhere. yeah, well, and like it shouldn't be lost that they also that they lost Tony Jefferson, the strong safety, really really underrated player. I really liked him. Who's he with? He's like a Raven now, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. We talked enough about those stupid Cardinals. On to the Rams. I think there are three certainties with the Rams. One, I am certain Jared Goff is terrible. Two, I am certain that Aaron Donald is one of the best players on the planet. And three, I am certain that they're going to win at least one, if not both games against the Seahawks, because goddamn it is what the stupid Rams do. So does Goff have a chance?
I was not a big fan of his coming out. I thought Carson Wentz was the clear number one quarterback in that draft, and I still believe that. But Goff didn't really have a chance last year, and now they got the biggest addition. Everyone's talking about Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods and the receivers they got. The biggest addition is Andrew Whitworth, is that he finally had a left tackle that can protect him. He doesn't inspire much in me, Goff. Like, he just seems like a regular dude to me. I don't see him being a leader of men. I mean, I watched the Hard Knocks last year, and after watching Hard Knocks, I had zero interest in watching the All or Nothing. So, because he did nothing for me. Literally, that's not a pun. Like, it was nothing. But he's going to have a shot. I just not such a big fan of his. I don't really see the tools, to be honest. I'm very surprised when he went number one overall. I didn't really see it.
Do you see any significance to... So they traded a seventh round pick to Washington to get Derek Carrier, who, you know, is familiar with Sean McVay's system. Do you see any significance to that move outside of just bringing in a dude who knows how to read the chalkboard?
Not really. I mean, he's a big guy. I guess he could block. Maybe
high praise.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's more of an indictment on Tyler Higbee than anything else. Or I mean, they took Gerald Everett, I believe, in the third round this year. So I really don't know. I really don't know.
All right, on to the 49ers. I'll be honest. I really like what they're doing, which sucks because they're in my division. Which because if they do good stuff, it means bad stuff for me. But like, I think Kyle Shanahan's a great coach, and John Lynch, in my opinion, is doing an awesome job. They got rid of Jeremy Curley, which is fine. He was their leading receiver last year, but you know they're not going to compete this year, and you know it creates an opportunity for some of the younger guys, including their rookie Trent Taylor, who they are. Really big fan of, who plays out of the slot just like Curley did. You know, they don't have a good roster, right? They don't have a lot of good players on the team, but they were able to get the two players they love the most in the draft this year, and they got both of them, which was amazing. They're still early in the build, but like I like what they're doing. As much as I like what they're doing, though, I still feel like they're going to be, again, kind of in that competition with your Jets for the top pick in the league, just based entirely on who's on the roster. Do you think I'm underrating like what they have in terms of talent, or are you with me on that?
No, I don't think you're underrating in terms of talent. I think that the scheme itself, and we saw in Atlanta, I think that they have a competent quarterback in Hoyer. I think that alone will let them win at least 3 or 4 games. So I think Hoyer's a much better quarterback than Colin Kaepernick. I really do. Just because he's able to do things, actually able to read a defense and make his receivers better, he knows where the ball needs to go, and that alone is an upgrade over what they had last year. And the Curley thing is kind of odd because they gave him a contract this offseason with guaranteed money, and then they just cut him. I mean, that's the sunk cost fallacy. If you believe that he's not worth it, then just get rid of him. But it is kind of odd that that's what John Lynch did. I mean, I've been a fan of what he's done this offseason, so I'm not really going to hold that much against him.
All right, finally, my Seahawks, who I swear always end up at the bottom of these lists. So basically, the things that I want to highlight, the Seahawks have a very, very deep roster, and so as a result, there's a lot of players who didn't make the roster who are really, really good football players. And so in my opinion, these are people that should be drawing some interest. Some of them have already been picked up. Some of them, they just traded out, like, you know, sending Cassius March, right? Cassius March was going to be cut anyway, but he is a good football player, so the Patriots went and picked him up. But bringing in Sheldon Richardson, Ataba Rubin was the odd man out. Like, he's not just, like, a guy. He's a good football player. Like, he's a starting defensive tackle in this league. Please, if your team needs one, you should be banging down the door to pick him up. I was all set to say everybody should be looking at Cason Williams, but he's already found a team. He's a guy. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's had some injury issues, but he's got potential to be a good wide receiver. There's going to be 2 or 3 cornerbacks that I can't even remember their names because this team carries so many. Any one of these guys are going to be good cornerbacks. What's his name? Pierre Desir. He's a defensive back. He's a good football player. It's just this team is loaded with defensive backs. So if you need some help there, your team should be looking at that guy. Going into the preseason, if you told me, though, that the team was going to cut backup Trevon Boykin, I would have been very surprised. They drafted him last year late. You know, he's not, like, pushing Russell, but they drafted him because he's basically like a Russell clone. I almost called him a mini Russell, but Russell's tiny. And, like, smaller than him is probably not going to work. But he's basically the same type of guy, though, where he's got a big arm, he's fast, he's athletic, he moves well, and he's really, really good at improvising. Problem is, he came in with some questions about his character, got in some more legal trouble in the offseason, had poor practices throughout the offseason, and while his first 2 games were good, the third preseason game, he was like 0 for 6 on the day. This last one, he threw 2 interceptions. Meanwhile, Austin Davis, yes, that Austin Davis, played really, really well across the board and did what Pete Carroll likes more than anything else. He was in at the end of the game, with everything on the line. Yes, I know Tamina's preseason game, but he was fighting for his job. And he went and he led the team, was 5 for 5, down 4 touchdowns, and was pumped up. Everybody on the team was coming, giving him high fives. He was totally fired up. And that is everything that Pete Carroll wants out of somebody. I promise you, Pete Carroll and company wanted Trevon Boykin to be the backup. That's why they drafted him. On paper, it's such a better fit. But on this team, like when they give you that competition credo, they're not joking around. Like, even if they want you to be the guy, if somebody else outplays you, you're not on the team anymore. And that's what we saw with Jermaine Kearse. You know, he was being outplayed. The only one I don't understand is Cason Williams. Cason Williams played great this preseason. I mean, it's gonna have to be a numbers game. What they ultimately did was they kept JD McKissick over Cason Williams, and McKissick also played well and has the advantage of being a returner and a running back as well, so he's got some more utility. What that tells me is that they are not ready for Tyler Lockett to be doing returns yet. But I mean, keep an eye on the Seahawks cuts. There's probably a half dozen starters there, and another half dozen like solid second team guys there.
Yeah, I mean, you know better than I do. So, I mean, they also cut Alex Collins, the backup running back, and the Jets just picked him up to be on the practice squad. So, I don't know. He never really talked anything special.
But he's fine, right? He's kind of like your Robert Turbin, right? Like he doesn't do anything wrong. I mean, he's solid. He can probably average at like 3.5 to 4 yards a carry. Problem is, you have another undrafted rookie running back, Chris Carson, absolutely blew him out of the water. He was big, he was fast, he was physical. Like, you know, he initiated contact, right? He would get that extra yard or two from contact, like the Seahawks love to see their players do. And again, you know, Alex Collins was drafted. Chris Carson wasn't. Chris Carson's on the roster because he played better, and that's all it comes down to. But Alex Collins is, if the team didn't pick up like Eddie Lacy, didn't already have some of those guys, Alex Collins is worthy of a roster spot, in my opinion. But it's a numbers game. He's just not going to make it, and so it is what it is. All right, end rant. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of Next Fan Up. Andrew, thank you so much. You were absolutely awesome. No matter what kind of stuff you like to say against yourself, where can we find you right now?
Right now I have a podcast with a former Bleacher Report colleague of mine. It's called Actually You're Wrong, which is a very fitting name. You can find that on iTunes. You can find that on EliteSportsNewYork.com. And I might be headed back to Bleacher Report, so we'll see about that. So we'll have some news when that comes through. But hopefully, I'll be more involved with the Next Fan Up podcast. You guys are doing awesome work, especially you, Justin, with the Sunday shows. I was originally supposed to do it, and the fact that you're doing a better job than I ever could, it makes me happy that it's in good hands.
All right, get out of here with that humility. Beat it. definitely let us know what happens with the Bleacher Report stuff, and of course we'll hear you on your recaps of the Jets games. I feel like we could probably just record one of you being depressed after the loss and just reuse that.
You'll record the first like 3 weeks of me being depressed, and after that I'll be happy if they lose a game. Because
yeah, that's true.
1-15.
All right, everybody, follow the show. That's at NFU Podcast. You can follow me. That's at Koreis, at Koreis. Find us online, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Email us if you have any questions, comments. If you would like to take some shots at Andrew, pile on since he's already taking shots at himself, please do. Our email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. And with that, we're going to turn it over to Landry Jones.
Next week will be next week. Today, I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.